This is ACC CardiaCast, a series on the latest clinical education brought to you by the American College of Cardiology.
Welcome to another podcast in the ACC series, Cardiovascular Disease and Diabetes, Reducing the Burden. Now we're going to do another journal club looking at an important study that was published in the journal Circulation. This was a real-world study of SGLT2 inhibitors prescribed to patients with diabetes in the real world, so-called the CVD REAL study. My name is Dr. Michael Blaha. I'm a cardiologist from Johns Hopkins Hospital. I'm joined by Dr. Silvio Inzucchi from Yale, who's an endocrinologist. So let's get right into this paper. This is a so-called real-world study using electronic medical records and medical claims files from multiple countries throughout the world, including the United States, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Germany, and the United Kingdom, and looking at those patients who are newly prescribed oral hypoglycemic medication. They could have received an SGLT2 inhibitor or a different hypoglycemic medication. And what these investigators did is took these over 300,000 patients and matched them by what's called propensity score matching, which tried to match patients who received SGLT2 inhibitors or another oral hypoglycemic for other characteristics like risk factors and other diabetes characteristics to sort of pseudo-randomize these patients into patients who received a different medicine or an SGLT2 inhibitor. So the idea here is, can we in the real world see if we can replicate the results of, for example, the EMPO-REG study, which showed a reduction in heart failure and mortality with empagliflozin in the real world, or in a clinical trial, in the real world. So once again, this study looked at about 309,000 patients, about half of which received a new initiation of an SGLT2 inhibitor, but half received a different glucose-lowering drug, and followed those patients for up to about a year per patient for the outcomes of heart failure and death. Interestingly, in this study, the minority of the drug usage was empagliflozin, and the majority was actually canagliflozin and dapagliflozin that was used in these countries. So that's the background of this real-world study. Dr. Inzucchi, what did this study show?
Well, Mike, basically, the two outcomes that they were able to look at in this paper was heart failure hospitalization and all-cause mortality. They did not have the cardiovascular mortality in this specific paper. And for the heart failure hospitalization, the hazard ratio seemed to almost recapitulate what was found in the EMPA-REG study, a hazard ratio of 0.61, so a 39% risk reduction. In EMPA-REG, we found a 35% reduction in heart failure hospitalization. So that's encouraging when you see real-world data basically buttressing the effects that you see in a randomized clinical trial. For the all-cause death, remember in EMPA-REG, the reduction in cardiovascular mortality was 38%, and that translated to a 32% in all-cause mortality, reduction in all-cause mortality. Here, the hazard ratio was 0.49, which is a little bit hard to believe. This is a 51% reduction in all-cause mortality. Importantly, as you mentioned, most of the patients, based on the countries that this study was performed in, basically European countries and the U.S., the more popular SGLT2 inhibitors were canagliflozin and dapagliflozin. Mm-hmm. So if these data are similar to those in EMPA-REG, would suggest that this is a class effect. It's not specific to empagliflozin. I think the other important observation in this trial is that most of the patients did not have established cardiovascular disease. In EMPA-REG, we had patients only with overt prior complications related to previous stroke or previous myocardial infarction, CABG, et cetera. So most of the patients here were, shall we say, a primary prevention cohort. And therefore, you could say that if these studies are believable, that these medications could apply benefit in those patients that have not yet had events or diagnosis of CVD.
Right. It is remarkable. I think the field has evolved with these real-world studies to start to consider them much more higher quality than we used to. The statistical techniques for matching these patients is quite sophisticated, like I said, creating sort of a pseudo-randomization. Now, in several areas, including the lipid space, several real-world studies have sort of recapitulated what has been seen in clinical trials, which lends a little bit more support to what we see here in terms of a reduction in these endpoints similar to what was seen in the randomized clinical trial. So it does raise the possibility that, of course, that we're going to see real-world effects of these drugs similar to what we're seeing in clinical trials, and maybe, like you said, across the class, and maybe even extending beyond patients with existing diabetes patients with existing CVD. So I find it very intriguing. So I guess, where do you see data like this? Where does it fit into the general understanding of SGLT2 inhibitors?
Well, there's a lot of excitement about the class. Obviously, it was the first drug category to show a definitive benefit as regards to cardiovascular disease risk after decades of failures.
Right.
So number one, we could not find that glucose control itself,
right,
even though it correlates epidemiologically with risk. By lowering glucose, we could not show a definitive benefit from a cardiovascular standpoint. That could be that the drugs that we were using in the decades ago, insulin, sulfonylureas, had some off-target negative effects, mm-hmm, such as hypoglycemia,
right,
and weight gain, et cetera. And maybe those were counterbalancing the beneficial effects of glucose
Good
control.
Point.
But the SGLT2 inhibitors and now the GLP-1 receptor agonists are two drug categories just in the span of 2 to 3 years that show major benefits, not only on MACE, but also on cardiovascular mortality. So there's a lot of questions, though. The first, as we already alluded to, is class effect. Does it apply to other members of this class? Again, CVD Real would suggest that the answer to that question is yes. And then the bigger question, I think, is this primary versus secondary,
yes,
prevention. And again, CVD Real suggests that this population of patients, most of our diabetic patients, have not had prior events and that they could also benefit. But I think we have to restrain our enthusiasm,
right,
to some degree. We need those trials
right,
to show whether this and other drug classes could have that similar benefit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is part of the story. These real-world studies are important. I'm glad that they're done, but we can't consider them with the same quality of evidence in a randomized control trial. But they do help to flesh out the story. It makes me at least a little bit more reassured that we're going to be able to see some of these effects in the real world. Now, one of the limitations of this study, the CVD Real study, and this was published by Mikhail Kozubarod, like I said, in Circulation 2017, was that it only looked at all-cause mortality and heart failure hospitalization. The question is, what about cardiovascular-specific mortality, and what about, for example, major adverse cardiovascular events? Well, there actually was another study in Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology late 2017 called the CVD Real Nordic study, just looking at the Nordic countries, which had data on individual cardiovascular endpoints as well as cardiovascular mortality. I won't go into great detail about that study here, but basically, it showed a reduction also in cardiovascular mortality and major adverse cardiovascular events in the neighborhood of 20% to 30% in that study, which is kind of reassuring for us cardiologists and I think all of us in the field that maybe we're going to see a reduction in endpoints that are cardiovascular specific as well.
You know, in the endocrinology community, some of these real-world studies don't have that good a reputation because there were dozens of these trials that came, or these studies that came out using the DPP-4 mm-hmm inhibitors. And there was a lot of excitement because they almost all showed a benefit, again, in this observational type of study. But then when the drugs were actually studied in an RCT, they were absolutely neutral. So it is true that healthier patients tend to get newer drugs. You wouldn't
right
think that, but it's true. Again, we just need to wait for
yeah
those trials to come out.
That's a good point. I did notice in here, of course, the patients who received SGLT2 inhibitors tend to have less kidney disease, tend to be a little bit younger and less risk. Now, theoretically, the statistical techniques will adjust for that, but we all know that there's potential for residual confounding. We need to take this with a grain of salt, but of course, in the context of positive randomized control studies. So anyway, I think an interesting study. Glad to be able to discuss it with you. I think for those listeners, it provides some level of reassurance about these data, but we still need to follow up ongoing randomized control trials with drugs like dapagliflozin and other studies ongoing with the existing SGLT2 inhibitors like empagliflozin and canagliflozin. But an interesting paper nonetheless. Thank you for joining us in this podcast and hope you join us for the remainder of the ACC program, Cardiovascular Disease and Diabetes, Reducing the Burden.
This has been the ACC CardiaCast, your latest education from the American College of Cardiology. Go to acc.org to find this and other additional resources related to today's show.